Work Hard will best express your perfect taste, your thoughtfulness. The makers of Hallmark greeting cards present The Master Swindle, starring Paul Muni. Now to preside over our program, here is your Hallmark host, Les Tremaine.
Of new wishes and new hopes. Ours is simply to bring you another year of great entertainment on the Hallmark program. We're starting tonight with a strange story of intrigue and one man's ambition. One of the most startling stories to come out of post-war Europe. And to play it, we have that superb actor, Paul Muni. Happy New Year, Paul, and welcome to the Hallmark program.
Thank you, Les. As a matter of fact, this is the only place I'd care to be tonight, outside of my own home.
What do you usually do New Year's night?
Well, my wife and I like to spend it at home, looking over all the holiday cards we received.
Making your next year's list?
No, just sort of thinking about friends. Mm-hmm. But you know, Les, after listening to you so often, we got into that habit you talk about.
Oh, what habit?
Well, turning the greeting cards over. There must be something to it. The three words we saw most often were a Hallmark card.
Yes, those three little words tell your friends you cared enough to send the very best. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the makers of Hallmark greeting cards bring you, on the Reader's Digest radio edition, a great dramatic story. We call it The Master Swindle, and our star is Mr. Paul Muni.
This is my last exhibit, Helen. If the critics are unkind to me again, I will give up painting forever.
Oh, darling, you know you can't ever do that. If you gave up painting, you'd be giving up your whole life.
Like all the men who devote their lives to painting, I'm guilty of two crimes, perhaps. A great pride in my work and an even greater ego. Oddly enough, I had a minor reputation in Holland, and I made good money as an artist. But every time my work was exhibited, the critics panned me unmercifully. So much so that my wife refused to let me see their reviews.
Now, don't ask me again, Ernest. There isn't a newspaper in the house, and if there were, I would have destroyed the art reviews.
Darling, you're treating me like a little baby.
I'm treating you like an artist, dear, which is practically the same thing.
But how can I paint if I don't know what the people think about painting?
That's the only way you can paint, Ernest. As soon as you see a review, you start breaking easels.
Sweetheart, why must you deprive me of the pleasure of getting mad?
Because you're a fine artist, Ernest. And these fools who say you're too commercial only set you back.
What fool said I was commercial?
Oh.
Huss. Paul Huss. It sounds like him. He doesn't approve of my work because I see the beauty in things.
Darling.
That pompous little pimple. If I don't paint a nose with a wart on it, he thinks it's commercial. What else did he say?
Nothing.
Helen, please stop buttering me. The man has two columns in the newspaper. He can't fill it with nothing.
Well, it wasn't such a bad review. He compared you with Vermeer.
Yes, I can imagine how he did it, too. Ernest C. Brandt is nothing but a cheap imitation of Vermeer.
Well, what difference does it make what he said?
It isn't what he said, dear. It's what they all say, year after year, tearing me down, smothering me inside, and not even knowing what I'm trying to do.
They'll know someday.
Not these idiots. They're killing me, darling. They're killing me. These smug little men who pass sentence on what is good and what isn't. Do you think they know the difference?
No.
A modern artist hasn't a chance with these fakers. All they do is worship the old masters, and Holland has so many old masters, they just won't let a new one be born.
Well, they can't prevent you from being born, Ernest. 100 years from now...
Never mind about 100 years from now. What did Haas say about me today?
I'm not going to tell you.
All right. Don't tell me. I'll find out for myself.
Ernest, where are you going?
I'm going to call on Mr. Haas in person and make him tell me to my face what is wrong with my paintings. With your critique, Mr. Haas. I'm very anxious to know how I can improve my painting.
Well, your technique, it's too slick. It shows that you have been painting rich Americans. Fat women who feel flattered when you finish a portrait for them.
And Rembrandt never painted fat women?
Rembrandt? Good heavens, you don't think you're in a class with Rembrandt, do you?
I'm waiting for you to tell me how I can be.
You can't. Rembrandt had warmth, style, color. Your work is livid compared to his.
Because I don't paint in an attic with an old bathrobe on and a broken-down stove in the middle of the room. Because I don't paint men with walrus mustaches and homely old biddies with missing teeth.
Because you don't paint. You simply work for a living.
And what do you do?
Mr. Seabrand, you are commissioned to do about 10 portraits a year, aren't you?
Approximately.
And for each of these portraits, you receive about $1,000, am I right?
Approximately.
Well, that's a tidy sum of money. Do you know how much I make for writing these reviews?
Approximately.
$52 a week.
You're overpaid.
I think I am underpaid, Mr. Seabrand. Especially if I give an art exhibit a good review. Good reviews make a rich artist richer, and yet they don't put a penny in my pocket unless I am rewarded.
You mean you take money to write a good review?
I said a good review puts money in your pocket, not mine. Unless, of course, you appreciate the value of a good review.
I can't believe it.
Why not? People always like to earn money, Mr. Seabrand. That's why you're an artist.
And that's why you're a lizard. How dare you criticize my painting in one breath and ask for a bribe in another?
Mr. Seabrand.
I ought to strangle you with my bare hands.
I will have to ask you to leave, Mr. Seabrand.
I leave without your asking, you imposter. You don't know what makes Rembrandt a great artist. You don't know anything about art at all. Unless it's signed by an old master. Without a label, you couldn't tell the difference.
My dear sir, that is no way to talk to an art critic.
I'm not talking to an art critic. I'm talking to a thief.
If that's the way you feel about us, just wait until your next exhibit.
They panned me even worse after that. All of them, harshest cronies, went out of their way to make disparaging remarks about my work in their daily columns. I stood it for a while, because there was nothing else I could do. And then one day, I thought of a way of getting even with them.
Ernest, you can't.
Why not? They won't know the difference. Those muddleheads judge a painting by the signature, not by what's on the canvas.
Well, even so, everybody knows a veneer.
Everybody, but not a critic. They'll rave about it, I tell you. A genuine veneer. They've got to rave about it. He was an old master.
But, darling, it's taking an awful chance. If anybody finds out you signed Vermeer's name to one of your paintings, well, you'll be disgraced forever.
If those critics know the difference, I deserve to be disgraced.
But you can be sent to prison, can't you? For forging someone else's name on your own painting?
It's worth taking a chance, Helen. Just think what it will mean if they rave about a painting of mine because Vermeer's name is on it. Think of how it will blast them out of their comfortable little thrones when I tell the world what fools they are. It'll make me, darling. Will give me a chance to prove that I'm a great artist.
I don't know, Ernest. You are a fine artist, but painting in Vermeer's style and signing his name, it's such a risk just to play a joke on the critic.
It's an opportunity to break the stranglehold these men have on the artistic world. Young artists won't be at their mercy anymore.
But it seems so impossible. How can you paint a fake Vermeer? Aren't all of his works cataloged?
I'll paint a new one. An undiscovered one. I'll buy 17th century linen for the canvas and grind my own pigment. I'll make a thorough study of his works, and by the time I finish my painting, I'll defy the experts to tell the difference.
You think you can paint in Vermeer's style, darling? I mean, well enough to look like an old master?
Don't worry, dear. I'll paint the greatest Vermeer ever painted. An old master's not an easy job. I knew the risk I was taking. Forgery is a 2-year offense. So I followed Vermeer's rules meticulously, day after day, for the 7 months it took me to complete the painting. Then I scratched cracks into the surface of the paint and baked them apart in the kitchen stove. And when I had added 300 years of antiquity to the old master I had just finished painting, I took it to my old friend, Mr. House.
Where did you get this, Seabrand?
Oh, I picked it up in Italy about 3 weeks ago. It was part of a private collection.
Is it genuine?
Why, of course. Can't you tell?
It certainly looks like a Vermeer, but I don't see anything in the catalog about it. What did you say it was called?
Christ at Emmaus.
Well, I can't understand why it isn't listed. But if this is an uncatalogued discovery, it's worth a fortune.
Well, I don't care about the value of it, Mr. Haas.
Are you crazy? Boyman's Museum is looking for a Vermeer. They'll pay any amount of money for one if it's authentic.
Well, I'm not selling it. I mean, I just wanted to know what you thought of it.
What do you mean you're not selling it? Why not?
Well,
you have no right to keep a discovery like this to yourself. It's an art treasure, if it's a Vermeer.
Oh, it's a Vermeer, all right.
Well, let's find out. Let us take it up to Boyman's Museum and have it tested.
It's a remarkable painting, Mr. Seabright. We've x-rayed the canvas, penetrated the overlays with quartz lamps, and tested the effect of alcohol on the colors.
Well, what did you find?
It's a Vermeer, all right. A genuine Vermeer.
Buying it, darling. They want it for an immediate showing, and they're willing to pay an enormous price.
Well, you can't take it, Anders.
But Helen, if they buy it, they'll move out that Holbein and put my painting in its place. And listen to this review, Helen. The new Vermeer at Boyman's displays the refinement of technique, the pointille touch, and the exquisite yellow and blue coloring so familiar to admirers of the old master. Christ at Emmaus is by far the mere best ever.
Ellis, you home already?
Yes, dear.
Well, how was it? What did they say?
Who?
The people at Boyman's. Weren't you going to tell them today that the painting was a fake?
Yes.
Ernest, didn't you tell them?
No.
Well, why not, darling?
Well, I couldn't tell them. The words wouldn't come out of my mouth. All I could do was stand there and look at the painting. It was such a thrill to see it hanging there. My painting.
But, Ernest, it isn't your painting.
Isn't it? Didn't I create it with my own hands? I didn't copy a picture of Vermeer's. I made one of my own, with his name on it. This is the best thing I've ever done.
Well, I know, but...
Darling, you should have heard how they raved about it. Critics from all over the world. Seeing what I saw in it, admiring the composition, the mood. It's really great art. Helen, do you know what they did while I was there?
What, dear?
They made the porters bring out a carpet and place it on the floor underneath the painting so there wouldn't be any sound of footsteps while people were contemplating the picture.
Ernest.
Yes, dear.
Aren't you going to tell them?
I can tell them. Not after seeing it hanging there. Not after hearing what they said about it. I simply can't let them take it down.
Well, what are you going to do?
Well, the only thing I can do, darling... I'm going to paint another.
We'll be back in just a moment with the second act of tonight's story from the pages of the Reader's Digest, America's favorite magazine, presented by the makers of Hallmark cards, America's favorite greeting cards. Now, here is Cy Harris with a New Year message from the makers of Hallmark greeting cards.
This is Cy Harris. How are you tonight? I hope it's a wonderful new year that's starting for you today. And I have a suggestion that I think will make it happier for you than last year. There's a beautiful little date book that you can obtain from your friendly Hallmark dealer. He'll give it to you free. And this unusual little book will help you every day in 1948. It will remind you of all the things you want to do when you want to do them. Why, there's space beside each date for notations so that you can jot down your social engagements, the birthdays of your friends, anything you want to remember. And it's small enough to slip into your handbag. You'll be proud to carry it everywhere, or you can keep it right beside your telephone, for it's really beautiful. You'd never think anything so attractive could be so useful. And it's free, a little present that your Hallmark could give to you. Just ask for your 1948 Hallmark date book at the store where you're hosted. Les Tremaine.
Our program continues now with the second act of tonight's story, The Master Swindle, starring Paul Muni.
It was a thrill to know I could paint like Vermeer, whether the rest of the world knew about it or not. So I kept on painting. I painted six in all, five of which were hanging in the finest galleries in Europe. But it was the sixth one that gave me the most pleasure.
It was during the war then, when Holland was overrun with the Nazis and Hermann Göring was stealing our treasures from all the occupied countries. One of his agents came to see me one day.
You don't seem to understand, Mr. Siebrand. Marshal Göring is looking for a Vermeer painting. And you have sold so many of them, you must surely know where I can get another.
I know of nothing, Mr. Schmidt.
But the Marshal is willing to pay for this picture. He won't seize it from you.
I have nothing to see.
Come, Siebrand. I happen to know you have another Vermeer in your possession. If you refuse to sell it to me, I will buy it from your widow. After all, it can be arranged that way, too.
Well, I do know of another Vermeer.
I want it, Mr. Siebrand, within 24 hours. I will give you a check for it tomorrow morning.
$600,000 marks, Helen. That swine Göring paid for it out of his own pocket. Imagine 600,000 marks for a fake art treasure.
This time the money pleases me, Helen.
Pleases you, darling. This is the greatest swindle in history. And Hermann Göring is the goat.
A year after that, the war ended, and Hermann Göring's collection of stolen art, along with my Vermeer painting, were found and classified by the United States Army. And among the experts who were called in to identify the pictures was a Dutch investigator named Lundstedt.
What seems to be the trouble, Lundstedt? Are you having difficulty locating the museum Göring stole this from?
No, Colonel. What troubles me is the fact that this Vermeer was not stolen at all.
You mean it was a gift?
Hardly. No museum in Holland would give her Göring anything, least of all a famous painting. Was sold to him by a private collector.
Sold?
For something like 600,000 marks, according to these files.
Well, I'm glad to hear that Fatso really had to pay for something.
I'm not. This painting was sold by a Hollander.
More power to him.
You don't understand, Colonel. In my country, Vermeer is a national hero, like Rembrandt. Streets are named in his honor, and reproductions of his works are hung in even the poorest homes. A genuine Vermeer is a national treasure. No one has the right to sell it to him. Pig like Göring.
I see what you mean.
The man who sold this painting is a pig himself. And what is more, he will be punished for it.
Open up. Open up in the name of the law.
Why? What's wrong, officer?
Mr. Siebrand? Ernest Siebrand?
Yes?
Get your hat, Siebrand. Come with me. You're under arrest.
Arrest? I don't understand. On what charge are you arresting me?
The most contemptible charge there is. Collaboration with the enemy.
Gentlemen, gentlemen, please. I'm not a collaborator.
You sold that painting, didn't you?
Yes, I sold it, yes, to an agent, but I wasn't collaborating with the enemy.
No? Where did you get it?
I bought it from an Italian dealer. It was part of a private collection.
Bought it from an Italian fascist and sold it to a Nazi. No, you're not a collaborationist. You're just a skunk.
Now you see here the painting I sold to Göring.
Yes.
Well, it wasn't a national treasure. I mean...
What do you mean, Siebrand? It was a Vermeer, wasn't it?
Well, yes, it was. It's a Vermeer, but it wasn't worth the price he paid for it.
What's that got to do with it?
Nothing, I suppose. But if I could just make you understand that I...
That you what?
Nothing, I can't tell you.
You'd better tell us, Siebrand, everything you know. Collaboration is a serious offense, punishable by death.
Good Lord. You wouldn't hang a man for selling a painting, would you?
This was more than a painting. You did Herr Göring a great favor when you let him have this masterpiece. And I'm sure he returned that favor in many ways.
That's a lie. I was treated the same as anybody else.
Sit down, Stephen.
And let you accuse me of seeking favors from men like Göring and the rest of those swine? Don't you think I saw what they did to us here? Where do you suppose I was during the war? In Switzerland?
Sit down, Stephen.
No, I sat for 5 long years. Where they starved us and stole from us and killed the little children in the street. I sat down while they lived in my house, giving me orders at the point of a bayonet, and slapping me with those greasy paws. Do you think I collaborate with them?
All right, that's enough.
Gentlemen, I've done many things in my life, but I've never been a traitor to my country. I request permission to make a confession. told him my story just as I told it to you. And when I was finished, the chief of police looked at me and said...
It's an astounding story, Seabrand.
I know it is, Mynheer. I hated to admit I forged these paintings, but I proved I'm not a collaborationist.
It remains to be seen. I've heard confessions before.
What are you driving at?
It's a good story, Seabrand, but I don't happen to believe it.
Good glory. Do you think I made it up?
It would be a fairly smart idea if you did. Dodging a big crime by confessing a small one is an old standby. Well, it isn't going to work in this case.
But you're insane if you...
Insane or not, I'm going to have this painting examined by experts. They'll know if you're telling the truth.
No, they won't. They've examined it before.
They'll examine it again. And if this painting is a genuine Vermeer, your confession won't be worth a hang.
I can't go back on my word. I said it was a Vermeer before, and I say it's a Vermeer again.
Seabrand can't discredit us. He knows he's a Vermeer. He's just lying to save his neck.
And after using every test known to this museum, it is our opinion that the painting is a genuine Vermeer.
It's an outrage. An outrage, I tell you. Those fools are making the same mistake all over again. Either that, or they're afraid to admit the first one.
Naturally, everyone's wrong but you, Mr. Seabrand.
Naturally. I painted those pictures. I know they're a fake.
And the Boyman's Museum paid you over $100,000 for a fake.
Boyman's Museum was swindled. Just the way Goering was. They couldn't distinguish my work from Vermeer.
You expect me to believe you paid as well as Jan Vermeer? You're going to stand trial for collaborating.
Now, wait a minute. I can prove I painted those Vermeers. Prove it beyond the question of a doubt.
How?
By painting another one. Then the experts will have to admit they made a mistake.
You mean you're going to paint another Vermeer right here in prison?
If you let me have the materials I need, I can do it in 6 months to a year.
I'll give you 8 weeks, Mr. Seabrand. And if you can't paint a new Vermeer, the trial goes on.
And if I can,
you'll be arrested for forgery.
Flagellite. I need the powdered stones, and I can't use linseed oil. It won't dry.
Badger hair brushes. Only badger hair. And don't forget to overheat the paint.
It's done, Helen. At last, it's done. Oh, they rushed me so I never thought I'd finish.
Well, you're not finished yet, Eric.
Why not?
I've got to take it home and bake it in the kitchen stove.
Amazing. You're an amazing man, Mr. Seabrand.
You like the painting?
It's remarkable. The refinement of technique, the blues and the yellows, the exquisite detail. I didn't think it was possible for any man to copy someone else's style so completely without a single flaw.
Oh, but there are flaws. The hands, for instance, they're mine, not Vermeer's. And that chair in the background is like the one of my studio chairs like that didn't even exist 300 years ago.
Even so, it's still a Vermeer.
No. Don't say that. It's a fake. A forgery.
It may be a forgery, Mr. Seabrand, but it's not a fake. This is real art, no matter who painted it.
You really think so?
Vermeer would have been proud of it. And you should be, too.
Proud of another man's work.
Your work, Seabrand. Another man's name. The pity of it is, you could have done just as well if you'd painted under your own name.
Could I? Well, perhaps I will now. Now that I know who I am. If I ever get out of jail, I'll paint as I've never painted before. And maybe someday, someone will copy me.
We'll be back in just a moment. But first, here's Cy Harris again.
You know, a neighbor of ours just got one of the 1948 Hallmark date books, and she said she could hardly believe it, that she had obtained anything so attractive and so useful free. I think you'll agree it's unusual. And this little book is really beautiful. You'd be proud to carry it everywhere or keep it right beside the telephone if you like. And how often you'll use it all through the coming year, why, you'll refer to it for all of your social engagements and your appointments, for all the things you want to do. Like planning club meetings or when to plant what in your garden. It will help you to be thoughtful of your friends by reminding you of their birthdays and their anniversaries and every date you want to remember all year long. You know, I hope you'll drop in tomorrow at the store where you buy Hallmark cards and ask for your 1948 Hallmark datebook. And I'm sure this little present from your Hallmark dealer will make life easier for you and happier through all the year ahead.
Thank you, Cy Harris. And now, once again, here is the star of tonight's show, Paul Muni. Paul, you certainly gave us an exciting word picture of Ernest Seebrand, whose real name was Hans von Migren.
Well, yes, he must have been quite a man. I was sorry to have to read in the papers yesterday that he died in a hospital in Holland before ever serving his prison term for forgery. By the way, I'd like to meet your star next week. It may be Christians. She's one of my very, very best favorite actresses.
And one of mine, too, Paul. Ladies and gentlemen, we hope you'll all be listening next week when the makers of Hallmark greeting cards bring you a true story from the Reader's Digest, America's favorite magazine. The Woman Who Couldn't Come Home, starring Mady Christians.
It's a great story. Paul Muni was supported by Mr. Sonnegard in the role of Helen. The Master Swindle was dramatized by Robert Sloan and was based on the true story by Irving Wallace entitled The Man Who Swindled Goering, as it appeared in the Reader's Digest, America's favorite magazine. The Hallmark program was directed by Mark Sloan, with music especially composed by Jack Miller. Hallmark cards are sold only by selected quality stores, never sold from door to door. Remember, a Hallmark card will best express your perfect taste, your thoughtfulness.
And now this is your Hallmark host, Les Tremaine, saying goodnight to you all until next week at the same time. See you then. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.